Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, he knows it, and he almost had it. And the fact that Tiger Woods was able to walk off of 18 with a fist pump despite finishing second, he knew that Brooks Koepka was the better golfer in that tournament and certainly better yesterday. And had he just made a couple of makeable birdie putts, would have won that in a walk without having any of the drama in those final three finishing holes. But it's a hell of a day, man. It was great for all of us. And as Ren Coomer just said, when Tiger is on the prowl, it brings everybody together as sports fans.
Yeah, have we seen the numbers on viewership for that tournament?
No, I have not seen preliminary numbers.
I keep on looking for it. I'm sure we'll have it at some point today, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's a giant jump. You get the Tiger effect. It's what it is. And I, you know, when you mentioned it this morning too, I had admittedly kind of forgotten about Koepka missing as many putts as he did, or not converting as many birdies as he did. And he played mostly error free, I guess, but you know, still had some opportunities to put points on the board. And I was so willfully consumed and wrapped up in Tiger's pursuit that I just kind of took Koepka. Maybe it's because of the kind of golfer he is or the kind of dude he is. I just kind of took him as a steady constant and admittedly took him for granted, even though he was leading the tournament as long as he was. All I was looking for, drama-wise, though I appreciated the drives of Brooks Koepka, was Tiger Woods stalking around.
I wonder if anybody else was in the same position that I was in, and it shows you what it means to you as a sports fan when you turn down the opportunity to go play golf, to watch golf. And almost always, I'm like, look, you know what? I'll DVR it. I'll be able to watch it for work, and I'm just going to get out there and play. I felt that I wanted to be a part of it in real time to the point where I turned down an offer to go play. Is that the right thing? I think that's the right thing.
It depends on how much you've been playing, too. Because for me, I do the same thing. I work in baseball the last 2 years, it's different because I didn't have an opportunity to play. You just can't do it. Not doing the media side. I mean, if you don't play, if you're not like a constant golfer, if you're just kind of like the Sunday duffer sort of thing, if you're not getting out there a couple of times after the Masters, you've lost your chance. Because if you're watching tournaments, it's always, if you haven't gotten out there to play and work your game, it's always more beneficial to just watch it instead of go play, because the playing, it's just going to be, you're going to be bad. You're just going to suck.
Of course you're going to be bad, but you're still out there playing.
Of course, but you're going to take that whole day, you're going to suck, and then you run the chance, because of where Tiger has been this whole summer, you run the chance of missing something like that.
Right.
I mean, he'll have brought eyes back, I guarantee you that. The viewership will be up and up drastically. And anybody who went out to play is pissed they missed that.
This just posted by Darren Rovell on Twitter. Tiger effect. The overnight ratings of yesterday's final round of the PGA Championship were up. Rob Gronkowski will be very happy. 69%
nice.
Over last year's final round overnight ratings. So up nearly 70%. And that's for the 630 texter who says, oh, bull bleep, Tiger doesn't bring us all together. Yeah, the numbers say that he does.
I don't know if the texter's referring to Tiger's misdeeds, his terrible, terrible cheating habit and that whole thing.
Oh, please, we know there are worse things than that.
I've no idea, but there are worse things than that. But for a lot of people, like, listen, that the extra 69% they grabbed from last PGA to this one, a lot of those involve fans who were still concerned with his issues there. He'll still concerned with his backstory there. It just does. Whether you've gotten over it, whether you've put it in a different place when you watch him play, that's up to you. But a lot of people haven't. Still, they watch.
The Chicago Wolves are making big plans for their 25th anniversary. Get your season tickets now and receive exclusive benefits. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES. You're going to have to help me with a bit of a breaking football story here that, in a strange way, actually affects the Bears. And I'm going to have to try to do this step by step here. When we talk to Mike Florio, he's going to be able to explain it. Maybe we'll know more. But don't know if you saw the Jaguars quarterback Jalen Ramsey was suspended by the team for a week for a strangely motivated diatribe against a local media member who simply had done his job in describing what had happened at a practice.
Yeah, Dante Fowler and another player got into it in a post-whistle kind of skirmish sort of thing, and a reporter or number of reporters had described the incident, and Ramsey took exception to the reporters talking about the fight, at the very least, talking about the fight the way they did or talking about it at all.
So here's what happened. This is from ProFootballTalk.com with the latest. At a time when the eighth overall pick in the 2018 draft remains unsigned, due to the issue of voided guarantees, the fifth overall pick in the 2016 draft likely has had his remaining guarantees voided. Jaguars cornerback Jalen Ramsey, suspended for a week by the team, most likely has seen the financial protections for 2018 and 2019 evaporate by virtue of the punishment. It's possible, but not likely, that Ramsey secured the removal of language voiding the guarantee for a team-imposed suspension. Ramsey signed a four-year, $23.5 million deal, has a salary of $2.572 in 2018 and $3.634 in 2019. Because the Jaguars typically remove offset language from top 10 rookie contracts, Jacksonville and the Rams are the only teams who do that, the ability to escape future guarantees has a bit more relevance than it otherwise would. Of course, the chances of the Jaguars dumping Ramsey reside somewhere between slim and none. He's already one of the best cornerbacks in the game after two seasons. Before they'd cut him, the Jaguars would be able to trade him for something much more than a conditional seventh-round pick. Still, the situation shows the value of the haggling in which Bears linebacker Roquan Smith currently is engaged. If Ramsey had been a bust, the Jaguars would now have a way to easily save more than $6 million. So it's largely academic. And this is according to...
But only because Ramsey is as good as he is it academic, right?
Well, that is, to me, what hits home here. And apparently the Jaguars now have told Ramsey his guarantees will not be voided. But this is an example of for what they are fighting, for a team to gain these advantages, to have these opportunities based on something that happens on or off the field, that all of a sudden they can say, oh, and by the way, by virtue of this suspension that we have decided to invoke unilaterally, now if it were to come down to it, we don't owe you this and we don't owe you that.
We talked with Hub last week, and he mentioned that this is on Roquan Smith. He believes this is on Roquan Smith, and it's on CAA for trying to prove a point like this. I love Hub to death, and I just don't agree with him here. And it's because the short window the players have to make these contracts, to make this money. Admittedly, I'm more pro-labor than I probably ought to be when it comes to stuff like this, I guess, but I'm always going to have a soft side for the guys who put themselves in harm's way on the field. And, you know, who's to say that Roquan Smith can't go out there, break a leg, never quite get back to the player he was, kind of gets salty, goes off on a media member, and gets suspended and loses $6 million that way. Like, there are just too many ways. You know, people say that, you know, removing this guaranteed money and the way this would have to go down, the odds of it happening are so infinitesimally small. I don't care. I guess if I'm Roquan or CAA, some of it's performative and some of it's to make a statement, I guess, to the league. Okay, if that's distasteful to you, cool. But in a league where so many variables outside your own control affect your money and what might be your only chance at a contract, I can't hold that against Roquan Smith. It's difficult for me to do that. Call me naive. It's entirely possible that I am being naive in this sense and that maybe he's got to put it away for the larger picture of the team, I guess. But I find it very difficult to put away that idea when it comes to Roquan and his holdout.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein, the Bernstein and McKnight Show, Sports Radio 670. The Score. We are on from 9 to 1 Monday through Friday. Wednesday, we're going to be back at Gallagher Way. We'll be hanging out there right outside the ballpark.
It's our home away from home.
We'll have our little wireless microphone inside the park. It has been very good to us as far as grabbing us company during the show, so we look forward to doing that once again. And for those who are texting that people tune in because they hate Tiger, I don't think so. I don't sense that at all. I think it sounds like that should be true, but you didn't get a whiff of that. I personally don't know anyone, just anecdotally, who's rooting against Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I do.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
And what's the reason for it?
A lot of them are women.
Okay, well, then there's a lot of other golfers.
I'm just saying. I mean, yes, there are, and probably there are, but Tiger is Tiger. I mean, let's not mistake the fact that he stands out as an exception to almost any rule when it comes to coverage
or when it comes to
perception.
It's not like he was beating women. He was just philandering.
Yes.
So it really has to...
I don't think a lot of women... Well, I should say some of the women that I'm talking about that have written off Tiger, some don't like at all that he cheated on anybody, and he's kind of done.
Okay, I just
however,
on our always sliding scale of sports misdeeds,
I agree.
I think some of that is when we start talking about we're talking about University of Maryland and what's going on. Yet another football program is embroiled in an abuse scandal in which a guy died.
But people, it's understood. People watch stuff they hate. Whether it's Tiger playing golf on Sunday or whether it's reality television that they say they hate but somehow makes them feel better about their lives because they're not the idiot thinking they can find true love on The Bachelor or listen to stuff they hate. People still engage in content that they don't like. And whether they process why they don't like it or not, it doesn't. You think the PGA cares?
Yeah, you sure didn't hear it on the course,
though.
Why you
watched Tiger?
You sure didn't hear it on the course.
No, you didn't.
You heard nothing but encouragement for him.
I'm sure some people walked off that course going, boy, I just really haven't gotten back into Tiger, but that performance is great, and that's why I was cheering for him today. There's all that kind of stuff that goes on. People watching, fans of any, they're complicated structures of thought that nobody really takes the time to go through because it hurts your brain so much. Does mine anyway.
See, it didn't mine. I see him out there with the black hat and the red shirt, and I am there for him and wanting him to get back to what he was because I root for greatness, to be great, to stay great, to give us what greatness is supposed to give us.
He's got this awesome combination right now of greatness and nostalgia because of the time away from the game. Because of the rebuild in his swing, the surgeries, and all that kind of stuff. He hasn't won a major in 10 years.
I love what you said before. If you're just joining us, Connor made the point where we're always identifying who's next in the PGA, or who's the best player to have never won a major. And for technical reasons, Connor was making the argument that right now Tiger Woods is the best player to have never won a major.
Because that ain't Tiger. That's a different guy. Sure, that... Can't find the green on Sunday.
I wish I would have thought of that.
I'm
a little mad that you thought of that.
You're mad, huh?
Semantic wordplay there.
Well,
because
if nothing else, I love battling in semantics.
It makes total sense, though, because with this incarnation, it's a different guy.
Look at how he's kept himself in contention. Look at the way he's able to make shots happen. That's the same ability, but it's an ability that's been put into a different body. Literally a different body. He has spinal cord that's fused.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's played golf like that before. Not at that level. Your uncle, that's the only other guy. Hey, he goes out there on Sundays and hits it around White Deer Run and barely makes it up and down. And God bless him for doing it. But that's the only other guy you know that's done that.
Yeah, how many times has he rebuilt his swing, even with all the injuries? I mean, that was after he won a major on a broken leg, and he has had any number of swing coaches and swing changes, and he's just sort of emerged as this now.
Because of his ability, because of whatever you're going to call it, skill set or natural talent or all the hours he put in between the ages of, like 2 to 25, he's got this blend of greatness and nostalgia. Watching him, you're watching an incredible performance, and you get the added bonus of watching something you watched when you were a kid or when you were younger. You get it all.
You mentioned you had some other thoughts about David Bodie, too, sort of how we're looking at his game. We sort of looked at it with the statistical perspective of where he is, talking with Ron Coomer also about his maturity, the way that Bodie, when he was on the show earlier today, the way he was describing his approach to that at bat. That, look, let's call it what it is. That's an all-time Cubs moment last night.
There have only been three Grand Slams down 3-0 in the ninth.
Ever.
Ever.
It is objectively, and people got so mad at me because Twitter, everybody gets mad at everything, the amount
That's
of outrage.
The only reason Twitter exists.
That it was objectively one of the most dramatic victories ever. It's just a fact. That's not my opinion.
Yeah, the win probability added alone, the shift in all the nerd stuff does that for you, to say nothing the fact that it's a grand, when you're a kid, and you're playing wiffle ball,
mm-hmm.
and you're hitting against your brother or your best friend or whatever, what's the stuff that you're saying as you're stepping into the batter's box? down three, bottom of the ninth, two outs. That's what you say. If nothing else proves it, that should.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. A lot more to come. Can grab some phone calls, too. We took one that was a little odd. Yes, it was the trade Chris Bryant call.
It's the overreaction to the overreaction of the overreaction. Oh. It's fun stuff.
312-644-6767. That's how you get a hold of us here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's Cole Hamels, who's the Cubs' best pitcher. Don't look at me like that. I'm not lying. You know I'm right.
Oh, yeah, it's just, you know, you stare into that stone-cold objective realism, and sometimes you think, my God, I wish I'd gotten there first. Yeah, he might be. Right now, going like that?
I don't think there's any question right now.
We talked to Jim DeShays. We talked to Coombe. We talked a lot. That was vintage Cole Hamels.
Yeah, if you missed Jim DeShays, very interesting stuff on John Lester that I asked him straight up, what do you do with whatever you are now if you're John Lester? And his thought, counterintuitive though it may be, is he needs to make hitters less comfortable. If you look at the guys are digging in and taking big swings on all of that Lester stuff that's around the plate, but not quite as good as it used to be, as hard as it used to be, with as much movement as it used to have. And JD's suggestion was push some guys off the plate a little bit, not necessarily headhunt, but establish the inner part of the plate and maybe make people a little less comfortable.
And bring your intention to a man who throws in the NL West. He has thrown 125 innings so far this year, held himself a 1.275 whip, that's walks and hits per innings pitched. His ERA sits at 3.97 and his FIP 3.95. A guy who those numbers kind of, and obviously I'm doing the thumbnail version for you real quick, feels right, you know, just kind of, okay, those check out. That seems to be a guy who's hanging in there. That guy, and don't lose your mind when I do this. That man is Derek Holland.
Wow.
Do you know how Derek I had a lot of conversations with him in that last, his season with the White Sox.
Did not enjoy watching much of that.
It was tough, but he had one, he was insistent on one thing. As a left-hander, insistent on throwing in to right-handers. On knowing that you've got to be he had to be able to throw a breaking ball into right-handers, a fastball into right-handers, and whatever kind of, you know, cut, two-seamer kind of thing he liked to work as well. He had to throw three pitches in to right-handers in order to work. Not necessarily for strikes, but that's what he was looking for most of the time. Last season was a disaster for Derek Holland in the White. It was awful, absolutely terrible. So he signs with the Giants, and I figure, okay, there's not much there. Because in order to be a left-hander that works into right-handers like that, you need, at least the conventional wisdom goes, a ton of velocity. You have to be, you have to throw hard. Holland didn't, and Lester's not that much of a hard thrower. That said, when it worked for Holland, when he was hitting spots and getting called strikes with some of the breaking balls specifically, you could see how a lot of those right-handers were off balance, were put off by what he was trying to do and how he was trying to work. I think, you know, JD's idea here is akin to that kind of approach. And I think he's got an interesting idea, because what you're not going to do is find the extra mile and a half, you know? You're not going to find the extra, like Hawk likes to say, another 3 feet. You're not going to find another three
Even
feet on that.
Even grunting like Max Scherzer was last night.
I don't think it's coming around. And if it does once, I don't know if it does again.
I hope that doesn't become a fashion. I hope that this
what, the grunting?
Pitching grunting thing doesn't.
I think it's already there more than you might know. Really? We just don't have that. Yeah, we just don't have the ESPN mics.
To your point,
up on everybody.
And several people responded, I should have read the text. I should have read it out loud. Is that when we were wondering if Matt Wieters was actually screaming something after he got up and realized that the ball left David Bodie's bat and wasn't coming back. It's an ESPN game. Had he screamed something, we would have heard it.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point.
Right?
That's a great
that
point.
That was clearly just a silent resignation, recognition of that contact.
Yeah.
Those mics don't miss anything.
No, they really don't. No, they don't, especially the mics that A-Rod has on every single broadcast. The 50, was it 51 seconds or 59 seconds of time that he graced the assorted media with in the lunchroom there at the Wrigley Field press box before the game? I think it was 51 seconds.
Bernstein and McKnight brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Wildcats host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Illinois, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are now on sale at NU Sports. Com. To Old Town next, and George on the score. Hi, George.
Hi, guys.
What's up, George?
I was thinking is that the reason Bodie was in the position is because you got a hustle play by your right fielder, and he's hustling down the line. He gets on base. Then they hit you guys.
Looks like we lost George's phone, but
I'm not sure where he was heading with that.
Well, Hayward runs it out and beats Wilmer Defoe on the thing. It does. I mean, it
the confluence of circumstances that led to Bodie being in that position.
Okay. Yeah, Bodie kind of pointed it out too. You don't come back down from 3-0 with two outs to hit a grand slam all by yourself. You got to have three runners on base. You know, and in various ways they were able to do that, and Ryan Madsen obliged a little bit by completely imploding too.
Yeah, it's part of it, but still, he put the pitch there, and the kid in the moment was prepared for it. He walked you through exactly what he was looking for, why he was looking for it, what he was telling himself to do, and then to be that exuberant helped make it what it was. The bat flip, the helmet toss, the Mr. Airplane Arms, everything that he had going on there, and the response of the teammates. Like you say, that one still photo that looked like it was from the right field bleachers.
Yeah.
To see him just
right
coming down the line as he's turning toward home on the trot, and he is there waiting to savage him. And he was roundly savaged.
And you got to get rid of the helmet because it just hurts more if you've got the helmet on because guys go after it harder.
It's like football.
Yeah.
We can use the head as a weapon.
It's a lot like that. I worked at a bar as a bouncer for a little while, and they hired a bunch of dudes that looked like me to be bouncers at this bar.
That's a weird choice.
6'3", 165. It was a bunch of skinny dudes. I was the most mainstream looking dude. There were a couple of hipster guys that were working bars, guys with mustaches and gauges in their ears and that kind of stuff. They were bouncing at the bar.
Are gauges the really big earrings?
Yeah, that's the stuff that'll expand the piercing that you got in there.
And it's fashionable to wear them larger and larger, like some sort of tribesmen.
Some of them, they don't have to be hollow, I think, but some are, kind of thing. So anyway, this bar had this philosophy where if you hire big dudes to be your bouncers, then drunks are just going to be more aggressive with them because they think you can't hurt them. Oh, he's so big and so strong and so large. I can do anything I want because it's really not going to hurt him. Where if you have a bunch of guys like me, they're not going to come after you because it's just like, well, I don't need to go after that guy. And I found this out after
Hold on a second.
I found this out.
Okay, I'm already confused.
Mm-hmm.
Hiring big bouncers, the intimidation factor, like they've got to come harder at the bouncer once they decide to go after a bouncer.
Yeah, if you're a bigger bouncer, if you're a drunk, let's put it this way: if you're the drunk,
right,
you're going to look at the big bouncer and go, "Well, I get to do anything now. I mean, this is no holds barred. Look at the size of this guy.
So I'm going to need to break a bottle.
If they're removing me from the bar, I'm going to any length to get this massive mammoth out of the way, right?
But why wouldn't the drunk say, this guy couldn't get me out of the bar if he wanted to?
I'm not saying there's a lot of logic in this. I'm just telling you what the idea of the bar was.
Fine.
And I found this out after 3 months of working there, that they were trying to get, the my-sized guys at working the door here so that they didn't have a lot of disturbance. And I thought, this is a terrible idea.
Mm-hmm.
This is an awful way to go with your guinea pig experiment. This is a bad, bad plan. So I think in the same way, guys lose the helmet because they know their teammates are going to go harder after them if they're wearing the helmet in the first place.
Okay, I guess I get the logic.
I'm getting you there.
Yeah, the only time I was actually removed from a bar by a bouncer, it was from a legitimately big dude. And I wasn't really doing anything. It's just that I was in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And the bar was closing.
Everybody's story about being removed from a bar, by the way, starts with, I wasn't really doing anything.
Well, no, here's what happened. It was below zero out. It's nighttime in South Dakota in January. It's below zero. And the bar is closing. And the cab services in Sioux Falls were not the most reliable. And I was waiting on a cab. And the bar says, look, we're closed. You got to get out of here. And I said, can I just wait in here until my cab comes? You're cleaning up. You're putting chairs up. And he said, no, by law, we can't have any patrons here after 2 a.m. You must be outside the premises. And I said, come on. It's freezing. It's below zero. And I got to wait for a cab. And he opened the door and he picked me up and he set me outside, and he closed the door. He just wasn't going to debate me. I mean, it wasn't violent.
It was just forced.
It was I was moved against my will to a place where he had to have me stand as he was instructed as part of his job. And I was cold until the cab got there.
Because God forbid if the one police officer arrived at the same time that the one taxi driver arrived.
Same guy.
They would have been in trouble.
Without question, it was the same
Look,
guy.
Look, Mick is doing a double shift. He's driving. He's right. Pulling cab and driving police. It's very difficult for him right now.
Yep. So, but look, I get it. But technically, I have been removed from an establishment by a bouncer, but it's just not for the reasons. I didn't really get my money's worth. You know,
it was a big guy, and that's why.
Right. And I was, you know, you could just pick me up, move me out. It's not like, too, I can track the Lyft driver on the iPhone or anything like that. You literally call from a payphone, and then you're at the whim of the gods. There's nothing you can do at that point.
I don't know how you guys made plans back in the day. I really don't.
You literally would call someone and say, meet me at this place at this time.
It sounds bizarre. I haven't called anyone in months. I have a phone. I haven't used it to call anyone in months.
The 515 texter, who's always busy, says, Connor, that's what you get for applying to work at a bar called The Bludgeoned Bouncer. But I never thought of that. I always thought that the home run celebrant losing the helmet was just throwing something throwable. You're not going to rip off your batting gloves or pull your pants over your head. I mean, that's an option. You know,
that's Yomer Sanchez's next trick, is ripping his pants off on a walk-off. I have been told that it is as much about self-protection as it is celebration. It just hurts getting rung up on the helmet as much as
But you're going to get that one teammate that now doesn't care and is going to attack your head as if you're wearing a helmet.
Yes, but if you're on Brian McCann's team, you leave.
Right, you don't want to be on
walk away
in the first place. You didn't want to be there. So we are going to be at Gallagher Way on Wednesday, and I think you mentioned this before, but we've been hearing a lot of the sound from Cole Hamels throughout the show today because he was just brilliant again last night. And it's going to be Cole Hamels, Jesse Chavez, and Brandon Kinstler, who are our guests for our On Deck luncheon, the last of the On Deck luncheon series, and it's going to be on the 27th. If you want to get tickets to that at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern, you go to 670thescore.com/on deck. And I suggest that you do that because it's really fun, and we get insight from the Cubs. And
it's the last one.
Who knows what's going to be going on in the Cubs season at that point? But what a scenario. You know, JD's saying, you know, maybe you hit a little rough stretch here. The Brewers are breathing down your neck. Here come the Cardinals all of a sudden. And that was in the context of our when do you break the glass on Chris Bryant kind of thing. And when do you just say, all right, man, whatever you got, now's the time to give it.
Yeah, you know how Jed and Theo kind of rotate across all the shows here on the station, right? Morning show gets some. We'll get some, you know, next week or 2 weeks, something like that. I was just thinking about what that rotation looks like. You know, their starts on shows. And by the time we get Theo and or Jed next, however the rotation kind of works out, I think we're still going to be able to ask the question about when does one break glass.
I think you're right.
On Chris Bryant.
It's probably 2 weeks, right?
It's probably 2 weeks. 3 weeks? What is it, Jay?
30th.
August 30th. So I'm just kind of thinking, set your watch. Look at the clock. I think we're going to be asking that question again.
That'll be Theo that'll be joining us, and I think that'll be one of many questions we're going to have, especially if we're still looking at this waiver trade time that could be busier. It's believed that there's a whole lot of behind the scenes activity of guys available, of claims coming in. Not that the Cubs could make a claim. A nice drive by Joe Maddon there.
Oh, really?
Good tempo
to that. Getting off the
tee today? Just good tempo to his swing. He doesn't have the old man swing yet. He's got like an actual swing.
Oh, where you have to, you know, try to find the angle. You're just reaching back to find an angle to come through on.
Yeah, and like, you know,
that's all you're doing.
Like leaning the body through. Like Ditka has an old man swing now, but he's Ditka, so he's still able to drive it like 300 yards because he's Ditka.
It's watching. If you do this kind of stuff, if you've been out to like the celebrity golf tournaments like this with pro athletes, watching the old pros who have lost their young guy swing, right? Mm-hmm. But seeing still the athleticism that they've got to bring the club through, it's I can't play golf.
It's not fair.
Half that well, and I have a reasonably workable body. It's ridiculous.
When we come back, we have another chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. You have to be listening for the special text keyword for your opportunity to win, and I'm going to give you that word in a moment, so keep it here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's your third chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is eat. Text eat to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is eat to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Bernstein and McKnight, little nice welcome breeze is picking up here as we sit in Lincolnwood at Bryn Mawr Country Club. Joe Madden and his friends out on the course for the third annual Try Not to Suck golf outing in Lincolnwood. Actually, Joe's been hitting all of the first drives for the various groups as they head out on the first hole here. A lot of fairway to work with on one. Ryan Sandberg just hit the absolute crap out of one.
Striped it.
Yeah, apparently he's playing enough that he is... What did he say? He's a 2.5 handicap?
No, he said to say 5.
He said to say 5.
Yeah, out the guy right here?
Well, he's out of the
he's
course.
He's got to make a couple of bucks.
Yeah, but nobody's listening out there, right? I don't think so. I don't think somebody's saying,
yes,
hey, now we got
gotcha.
You.
He's never going to play golf again, so that's useful information for those who are playing with Ryan.
But that's, and, you know, you watch a Hall of Fame talent stand over the ball and smack that thing. There are, like you say, There are golfers, there are non-golfers, there are athletes, there are non-athletes, and you can always see the difference no matter
how. The problem is that sometimes the athletes are non-golfers, and it doesn't matter.
That's like the Kyle Hendricks stuff,
Some of these guys are talented enough and understanding of the mechanics enough to make it happen regardless.
Len Casper told us that about Gary. I think it was McNeil and Parkins. We were driving back from Bourbonnais when he was saying that,
that
Kyle Hendricks is one of these guys who's just great at everything. And he says, how do you do this? Oh, okay, I got this. And then he goes out and shoots a 74, having not picked up a club in 6 months. That's just, that's annoying. That's really annoying. It's like the guy who's like the valedictorian and also the best athlete. It's like, you know, come on. Let other people be the smart guys if you're going to be the guy who's the best, four-sport athlete, please. Or it's like, my brother-in-law, who's such a talented musician, that if it's any
just picks it up. Any
stringed instrument. He had never played the banjo before, and my cousin had a banjo, and he picks the thing up. And he's like, "So this is how's this tune? This is open G. Oh, okay. So it's this on the. Okay, I got it." And then he's like playing the banjo. And he'd never played it before. That's not fair. You could hand the guy like a lute or an oud or something, and somebody would just explain, or sitar. Oh, so this is the bass line note, and the drone comes off of this. Got it.
It's a Francesca learning account.
Right, give me a second. All right, there, I'm playing the sitar. No, it doesn't work that way. No.
We were talking a little earlier in the show about the punishment for Jalen Ramsey, his being suspended, and the Jaguars. You mentioned they told him
they're not going to
take his money,
or they're not going to invoke the right to take his money. Because as I understand it, all that happens is not that most teams in this situation, when there's a unilaterally imposed team suspension, by rule, if you don't get the carve outs that Roquan Smith is sort of asking for here, you can have forfeited your guarantees to the money. Even if you never actually forfeit the money. That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about a stripping of the guarantee language that may not actually result in you losing the money. Just the team saying, if we want to now, this money is no longer protected from us.
It's double secret probation is what you're saying. It's the one step before actually kicking you out of Faber College. That makes sense to me.
Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I guess in terms of punishment to players, I just kind of been thinking of another storyline that may be somewhat manufactured and maybe somewhat, I don't know, bumbling a little bit. You read the story from the Cleveland Browns about Antonio Callaway.
Mm-mm.
He was cited for a marijuana possession, driving with suspended license after a traffic stop just a few days before the Browns' first preseason game, right? Hugh Jackson, as a measure of punishment, made Callaway play essentially the entire game. 78% of snaps, I think it was.
It's the John Timu rule.
Yeah, it's except that's out of necessity.
Right.
But Callaway, I guess, didn't want to play in that entire game. He was asking out in a couple of different places, and they were like, no, you're playing. I don't know. I'm looking forward to Hard Knocks, Episode 2. I understand that a lot of this is somewhat contrived drama. You and I talked a lot with Mike Florio about the confrontations going too far, but the exchange of words that Hugh and his offensive coordinator, Todd Haley, had in the meeting room about having guys available and ready to play. There are now, as I'm reading during the show, just kind of as we're sitting out here watching Joe Maddon drive a couple of golf balls, which, by the way, I haven't seen him hit yet, and he's just up on the tee, so let me just... Oh, yeah, that is a nice swing.
That's a bad shot, though.
Yeah, it's a nice.
Swing was good. That Cottonwood's going to lose a limb.
I lost it behind the speakers we've got set up here, so I couldn't see it. The perceived tension between Jackson and Haley is now being spotted up. Yeah, it's now being spotted up by more than just, oh, look for Hard Knocks this week. We'll see what happens here. It's being written, and it's being tamped down in some places, and it's being brought up in some. And I understand that first episode was a lot about Hugh and his family and the unfortunate circumstances surrounding the death of his mother and his brother, was it, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the same couple of weeks. And that's impossible to deal with as a human. I can't imagine. But there's questions about his running that team and running that franchise. And playing a guy an entire preseason game is just, it feels like something out of time, you know, out of a different time than punishments we've seen before, punishments we've seen currently.
We always used to hear Matt Bowen tell the stories about the last exhibition game and the guys who might be practice squad guys and the guys at the end of the roster. Usually, that does happen. It's usually not yet in the preseason. And usually they frame it as the opportunities when everybody's out, everybody's resting. And for the Bears, it was the first one. And for the Bears, that very first game, I'm sure they told guys, hey, it's hot. And the players who matter at this point are not going to play, so go have at it. You know, get what you can get out of it. Put something on film, as the phrase goes.
Yeah, but those are guys trying to make a team. Like,
right, not a veteran.
No, or Antonio Callaway, who was just drafted this last season in the fourth round. I mean, that's a guy who likely has a roster spot, right? I mean, assuming everything goes decent enough in camp and he doesn't get himself arrested and off the team again or something. It just seems to me... like that's different than what other coaches might be up to. And you know, if you announced yourself there to expunge all the terrible history of the Browns, it seems like some of the headlines coming out of that camp are a little more Mickey Mouse than you'd have otherwise thought.
And we're also going to get to that issue of, does being on Hard Knocks magnify some of this? Because it does make the story makes the story. When the producers and editors decide to use the scene that they did, this is when coaches are going to say it's going to be, well, now this is an unnecessary distraction, but... you know, they showed it. It was said. That was real. They didn't make anything up. That wasn't spliced together to make it look like something it wasn't. And Todd Haley's a bag, and everybody knows it.
That's another thing. It would be something else if it was an offensive coordinator acting out of character, or if it was, you know, something that felt a little bit more contrived. Haley's got a reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Of whether it's hard assery or whether it's being, like you said, a bag, it's kind of been both over his career, right?
Of being difficult and of also having conflicts with players because he didn't play. Remember, there was always,
right.
I forgot which player got in his face, but it goes back to when he was coaching receivers with the Bears, that he was a golfer in college, I think, or a golf coach, but doesn't really have the football background, and there was, for some players, it was getting past this point. It's almost like Jason Wirth and the baseball general managers now. This texter says, are you guys talking in the middle of everyone's backswing? Yeah, they can't hear
technically,
us.
Technically, yeah, but they can't hear us.
Yeah, I don't think they care, and they're not playing for money. It's a scramble, and I don't think anybody cares, but it's our job to talk. And we're not going to stop talking because Joe Maddon's teeing off.
Shut up, Bernstein.
Yeah, stop talking in the middle of my backswing.
I got yelled at once for continuing to do the pregame show during the national anthem in the background.
I was always in between on that.
It's tough. It's a tough call to do, but you can't, you know, they're scheduled. These things are so scheduled these breaks, the breaks go when they go. They're X amount of time. You can't sit silent for a minute and a half when all you've got is the minute and a half in a segment to do it.
815 says that punishment for playing the entire exhibition game was because he didn't notify the Browns of his arrest.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. That is why. Which, by the way, I mean, take all the decision-making or all the circumstances around it out of the equation. It seems strange for Hugh Jackson to do what he did.
Just a weird punishment. I mean, there's nothing wrong with punishing a guy for not letting a team know about his arrest, but usually you fine a guy. Or
also, maybe let somebody know. That's a bad decision by Antonio Callaway first and foremost, and then it compounded with another. It's like throwing bad money after, right? This is that's a kid, too, who was maligned coming out of Florida with his draft profile and all that stuff. He was one of we did him in Who's Your Guy? And it was the report was had a lot of the character issues thrown up for him, I guess.
That's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. And we are going to say good afternoon to Dan McNeil and Danny Parkins coming up next. So keep it here. You have the score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.